everybody. Grab your Bible and a pencil and a journal and even a cup of coffee and join in on our conversation. But first, I would like for you to write this down. Genesis 3, verses 1 through 6. Now the serpent was more crafty than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, "Indeed, had God said, 'You shall not eat of any tree of the garden?' And the woman said to the serpent, 'From the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat. But from the fruit of the tree which is in the middle of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat from it or even touch it, lest you die.' And the serpent said to the woman, 'You surely shall not die. For God knows that in the days that you eat, that your eyes will be open and you will be like God, knowing good and evil.' When the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was a delight to the eyes and that the tree was desirable to make one wise, she took from it its fruit and ate, and she gave also to her husband with her, and he ate."
Hey everyone, welcome to Write This Down with Dot Bowen. My name is Kara. I am Dot's daughter, and every week we sit down together and we talk through truth and scripture, and we are doing something a little different with this episode and next week's episode. We are talking about, it's really my story and my mom and I's story. We get a lot of comments about how we're so close and how we have not always been this way, and a lot of it has to do with what was going on in my life growing up. And in this episode, we kind of set the stage for that. It's a lot of backstory, but it is important, I promise you. And I will say it's really important that you come back next week and get the second half of the story, because that's when it gets really good. But we're really glad that you're here, and we would love for you to pull up a chair and join in our conversation.
Hey, Kara.
Hey, Mom.
Hey, you're not as chirpy today, huh?
I know. I am a little nervous. I'm not going to lie. Uh-huh. But it's a good nerves, but this is definitely going to be a very different conversation than we've ever had on here, at least.
Actually, I'm not sure we've ever had this conversation.
Well, maybe that's why I'm nervous.
I don't think we've ever discussed it, you know, with other people in the conversation.
Yeah. And I think we've talked about this in pieces too, because we're going to kind of talk about a lot of things. Yeah. So I'm nervous, but I think it will be really good. I think people will enjoy this conversation. At least I hope so. But because I do feel like, I know I get this a lot, and I think you do too, but a lot of people comment on our relationship of just how close we are and, you know, how, being able to talk about these kind of things and, you know, whatnot. And it's funny because anytime someone mentions that, I think it's almost like a gratitude moment I have, because I know that we have not always had this kind of relationship. And there are times in my life where I thought we would never be able to have this kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. So I'm always grateful. I have this moment whenever someone says something internally, I just like almost just thanking the Lord for what he's done, which is, I know, a lot of what we're going to talk about, what God has done in our relationship. But yeah, I am nervous.
Yeah. Well, I do want to kind of take the pressure off of you, because even though we're talking about our relationship, there's two of us in this relationship. And, you know, people do. They say often to me, I just love you, the way that you're so close to your daughter, Kara, and all your children. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the fact of how you get to serve Jesus together. And I do think often, like, if you only knew, because this is a God story. This isn't a Kara and Dot story. Right. This isn't about a mom and a daughter story. Even though we are part of the story, this isn't, we're not the main characters in this story.
Yeah, and I hope it gives someone hope that maybe if they have a strained relationship with their child, that, God can restore and redeem literally any relationship. And I think we are a living testament of that. So I am excited about having the conversation, though. So should we get into it? Need to rip the Band-Aid?
And let's just start from the very beginning. In the fact that I literally want to start where your dad came to me and he said, "I think we should have another child." And your siblings, your sister was 13 and your brother was 10 at the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, no. Like, he had gone to this conference, the guy that was speaking, was not married, nor did he ever have any children. And
so, yeah,
he thought that all these Christians, should have children. And so when Howard was at this conference, he felt really convicted that maybe we should have another child. And I really thought there's no way. And I remember thinking, okay, we can try it for 1 month, you know, because I really didn't have an easy time getting pregnant, you know, before. So I thought, it kind of put him off a little bit. And I thought, you know what, we can try it for 1 month. And if I get pregnant, then we just know that it's of God's will. But I never in a million years thought I'd get pregnant. And like I said, I had children that were older, and the last thing I wanted to do, you know, was to start back in the diapers. I mean, literally was able to go to the bathroom by myself. I was able to go to the grocery store, you know, and now he's wanting to have this baby. And I just want to back up a little bit, too, in that at this time, Howard and I were coming through and have really come through an amazing God story as well of how God had redeemed our marriage. Mm-hmm. And so here was, God has done a lot of stuff. He redeemed our marriage. He had, you know, brought us together. And now he was, you know, thinking we should have another child. So long story short, 9 months short, I get pregnant immediately.
You do. You get pregnant. Yep. Here I am.
I do. Yeah, there you are. And I remember telling Scott and Christy, you know, we want to talk to you. And they thought we were going to give them a puppy.
Yeah.
And we said, no, it's going to be a baby. And we didn't know at the time, because back then you didn't know. And now you choose whether or not you want to know the gender. But we didn't know if you were a girl or boy. Mm-hmm. And so 9 months came. I was very stressed over this pregnancy because for whatever reason, and it's certainly not true today, I don't know why they felt like you were Sarah having a baby at 99. I mean, I was not that old, but every time I'd go to the doctor, they'd like, well, maybe, you know, maybe there might be something wrong with it.
I think back then, though, it was, because it was in the 80s, not to, I mean, there's my age for you. It was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you were in your 30s. And I think back then that was, I don't know why it's different now, because I feel like women, like you said, have babies in their 30s all the time now. But there seemed to be a legitimate risk or worry from what you've told me, obviously. I don't know. But so, yeah, I don't know. But anyway.
Well, I will say this. We had 18-hour labor. 18 hours. Yep. In labor. And then an emergency C-section. And the cord was around your neck. Your heart rate was going down. Mine was. I had because it was 18 hours, I'd had epidural over a period of, you know, 18 hours. And so the anesthesiologist literally was sitting at my head, taking a needle and poking it in my chest to see if, making sure that the epidural wasn't coming up. And I remember him saying, you know, something about something. And I guess I smarted off. And he said something about being in a bad mood. And I'm like, shocking. Well, would I like to, know, what if I was sitting there poking needles on, you know, you and I've been doing this for 18 hours. So anyway, we had an emergency C-section. And so little did I know that that may be a little bit of a prophecy, because it was hard, it was difficult, and it turned out amazing. You were healthy, you were beautiful, and we were just so, so excited.
Yeah. Well,
I think we tell
that part because it's, I mean, I believe anyone who's here, there's a reason you're here. But for our story in particular, it was very clear that the Lord wanted me here, which it's a good reminder for me too, because sometimes, you know, it's like, what am I doing here? But I think that it's just like a good, like I said, I think every life here has a purpose, wouldn't be here. But for purposes of this story, I think it makes sense and makes a difference.
So as I said, I had a 13-year-old, probably 14 by this time, you know, an 11-year-old, and they were in school. Their school was way far away. We'd have to drive, carpool them, but actually I was the main driver, and it was a long ways. They were active in, you know, a lot of things. And so I'd stay at school and I was really involved, you know, teaching youth and stuff. So basically I spent a lot of time with Christy and Scott Mm-hmm. And you stayed with your dad a lot. There would be times mm-hmm. your dad would bring you to wherever we were. And I was like, oh my, like, did you, like, did
he let
like,
me dress myself
think
a
this
lot?
Out? And yes, he did.
And we were, I was like a 2-year-old, so you can imagine what I would piece together.
And if you,
nobody
can imagine. And I would just remember, like, I shouldn't say anything because, you know, he's been with her and taking care of her. And, you know, like, you know, was a comb not an option today? She wasn't going to comb her hair, you know? And he said, she always wants to wear this. I'm like, yep, she sure does. So anyway, but that space with us, again, you know, is a little difficult. Mm-hmm. School started. You started into school again. You're almost like an only child, and you're almost like the firstborn, and then you're almost the baby. And it was just a lot of mm-hmm. things. It was Christy, and I think she thought she had another child, and she mothered you and wanted to mother you and take care of you and dress you. And Scott, he just wanted
you. I felt like I had 2 moms for most of my mm-hmm. life, mm-hmm. good or bad.
And it was great. But I'm just saying there was a lot of distance and there was a lot of time mm-hmm. and then you were tall for your age. So then you go to school, there are a lot, you know, being able to feel like, I remember you wanting to stay after school program. And I didn't work at the time. I was a stay-at-home mom.
But you didn't have a corporate job.
Yeah. I said, Kara, why do you want to stay after school? And you'd say, well, my children, that's what you'd call it, my children would miss me.
I need to take care of them.
Yeah. And I was like, okay. And so there was always that, but there was also some hurt and some loneliness that uh-huh. I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can speak into that because looking back, I had a lot of pain in my childhood for sure. Like I mm-hmm. never felt really accepted. I always felt, and again, feeling, because I had a lot of friends. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I was not like an outcast by any means in terms of what you would see, but I was incredibly insecure. I'm 5'9", 5'10" now, and I think I hit my height at like 12. So for perspective, I was very tall. I'm mm-hmm. already tall as an adult, but I mean, I legitimately was, I think I was like 5'6". I found a basketball card when we were cleaning out your house, and I think I was like 10 and I was 5'6" already. So mm-hmm. I was very tall. I felt very awkward. I was not comfortable in my own skin. I did not like mm-hmm. who I was. I didn't like my personality. Like I remember you and Christy had very similar personalities, like both very extroverted, both, you know, don't know a stranger. You could talk to anyone. And I remember looking at the both of you and wishing I was like that. And I was more reserved. Mm-hmm. I was more quiet. I mean, even if I was comfortable in my own skin, that's just naturally how, you know, I'm more introverted. Like that's just how God made me. But I hated that. So not only did I not like what I looked like, I didn't like who I was on the inside either.
Mm. I remember you saying to me one time, I don't know if you remember this or not, but you'd say, Mom, you could talk to a wall. And I said, yeah, I probably don't care if it talks back. And you're like, well, how do you do that? Like you just go up to people and you start talking to them. And I said, yeah. And she said, and you said to me, well, how do you know that they want to talk to you? And I remember thinking, well, I never thought of it. And I said, well, I never thought that they didn't. And you're like, you never thought that they didn't want to talk to you? And I'm like, never crossed my mind.
I assume they didn't want to talk to me.
Yeah.
That was what I was operating out of. Yeah. And that was a very, like, very real. And, you know, like, now we laugh about because I'm very, I mean, I feel like we were telling this story and when we get really into, like, the meat of it, telling it from a healed perspective as well. Like I see, and I was not, you know, I was never chosen for anything. Like I remember dance after dance. I mean, I even high school, like middle school dances, like everything, like mm-hmm. sitting on the sidelines, sitting, like no one ever wanted to dance mm-hmm. with me. Like I just.
Because the guys were 5'2".
Well, yeah. I mean, there's think of like a middle school boy and then mm-hmm. I was already. Yeah. Jolly Green Giant over here. And on top of that, I wasn't confident. Like I didn't, like I said, I didn't, it wasn't just externally was I uncomfortable. It was internal. And that carried through a lot of years. And what I didn't know at the time in hindsight is that the enemy was setting me up. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, I didn't know. And again, this is where I know now as an adult, like how I'm wired, and I am such an internal processor. And again, this goes very different. You and Christy are the most external processors I know. Yeah. And so, and I mean, I remember you would say like, how was school? And I would be the kid and be like, it was good. Like, cause I didn't, I'm like, I don't know what else to say. So I didn't, I say that to say like, I didn't know how to express what I was feeling. Cause yeah. I didn't know what I was feeling. I didn't know I felt so uncomfortable. I just knew like there's something that wasn't like, I knew I wasn't probably super missing. Confident. But I could not, so I was suppressing everything, but I didn't, also didn't know I was suppressing everything. And I don't even think you knew to even know that I was suppressing everything because I put on a front, like unintentionally probably put on a front. I mean, I'm sure you thought I was like going through, especially in high school, like typical high school insecurity things, but.
Well, it was hard as a mom.
Yeah.
It is hard as a mom to see your daughter cry. Over not being picked. You didn't want to go to the dances because you said nobody's going to dance with me. Now, I will have to say there's a strong thing about feelings and truth because you would tell me you had no friends and then I would take you to carpool this, you know, and everybody would, oh, Kara, come running out. Everybody, and then whenever I went to school, even in high school when I would go, everybody talked about how much, you know, how wonderful you are and stuff like that. So, it isn't necessarily that reality is not, sometimes it's not what we feel. Our feelings aren't always what is true in reality. But it didn't matter if I really knew the truth and knew that you were loved and you know, a lot of people enjoyed being with you. And yes, you were an extrovert. But you did always want to be around people. You know, that's why you wanted to stay, you know, after school. Because, you know, again, remember, your siblings are a lot older, so you're really a baby, but you're really the firstborn. You're really, you know, the third, but you're really almost like the only child. It was just so many, you know, different things that were playing, I think, in your mind. And then, like you said, the enemy was definitely taking every opportunity to make you feel, again, feel not chosen. No one's going to care for you. No one's going to love you. No one's going to accept you. And even though you were with friends and you had friends, I don't think you ever felt like you had them, that you really, truly had.
Well, because I wasn't, I didn't know who I was. So I wasn't myself. Like I always felt like I had to perform or to be a certain way. And I felt that even at home. Like I felt like this is who, like we, I grew up in a very, you know, very strong Christian, and I had a lot of eyes on me because we, just with the nature of who we knew, where we were, you know, going to church, like that sort of thing. Like everyone knew, oh, I'm a Bowen. Like it was a thing. This is how Bowens act. This is what Bowens do. I was very much the perception. So I felt that. Of like, oh, it just very performance driven. Like this is who I need to be. This is how I need to act. More so, this is how I need to act. More so than this is what I need to be. But I compare myself a lot to Scott and Christy, and like, oh, this is how I need to be. And I think like a lot of teenagers, like wrestling with that. I think it would have made a big difference if I felt. Like I had a safe place to do that. And I'm not saying it wasn't safe. It was just my perception and I didn't know how to process it because all this is like in hindsight. And I think if I had known like, oh, like it's okay to doubt God with God. Like it's okay to question him or to be upset with him or to whatever emotion.
Not like what he's doing. Like
be mad at him. Yeah. Or not. Or even feel hurt by God. Like I didn't know that that was okay. And it could have even been taught to me. So I'm not even saying it wasn't taught. I just never heard it. If it was, if for whatever reason it didn't stick. And so I think that was a lot of how the enemy set me up. And I think that, like, I would say, even looking back on our relationship at that time, I wouldn't say that we weren't close, but at the same time, we didn't like really talk about things because I didn't know how to talk about them. You know, like, I don't think that was either of ours, no one's fault. There's no one to blame. It just was more of like, I didn't know how to talk about it. I didn't even know what I was feeling or thinking. And so that's where it kind of goes back to like, oh, how was school? I would be like, oh, good. Like, I just didn't, or I would say what I felt like you wanted to hear. And not because out of, not in a lying, but just like, you know, I just wanted to please my mom, you know, like it came from a genuine place, I guess is what I mean.
Sure. And, you know, again, I'm not taking the blame and I'm not going to take the credit with your relationship and what God has done. And I'm not going to take the blame for some of the other things of what you have done, what you've done, and some choices you've made, and then some of the things that, you know, God has done in your life, good and bad. These are, you know, certainly your relationship with God and you working through some of the things. But a mom does have a role. There are certain things that, you know, you're just busy, and I didn't intentionally not have this strong relationship with you. But again, setting it up, I'm not, you know, making any excuses. It's just what it is. And that is, I was really busy with the older children. And so a lot of that, when I would say how's school, if you'd have started in with a lot of stuff, I probably would have tuned you out anyway, because I'd already been going through teenage years with you know, with Christie's and with Scott and, you know, those kind of things.
Well, and at this time, Christie was married. She had she had kids. She was trying to figure out how to be a mom. So you were helping her. Like there was a lot going on. And I was so different than Christie. I mean, I don't know if that affected, but you know, even like if you were to ask Christie, how was your day at school? I mean, I'm sure she rattled off, you know, like
she told me before I asked.
Yeah, exactly. So, and neither, I mean, they're both, it's just two different personalities. And so I think that probably, you know, so when I say, oh, it's good, it was like, well, just leave, you know, all right, that's that.
Yeah. Because I have other issues I have to take care of with all the other children. But I will say this, that as we look back and what we're saying is we see that there is a life that God allowed to be born and be, you know, in our family. And you were that person, and that God chose you, and that God wanted you. I mean, Howard might have walked up and said, I think we should have, you know, another child, but it was God that brought you into this world, and you know, I almost lost you. And so those are things we go back to that. So the enemy really wanted, I think, you know, we do have a spiritual warfare. We, you know, that's why I read Genesis 3. The serpent, you know, was coming after God's two children. And I want to say this, you know, God, you know, perfect father, you know, in a perfect world with one rule, couldn't control their children. And so I always think back about how, you know, unless God steps in and changes a life, unless God steps in and reveals a lot of things to you, no matter what I said to you, or no matter even what you had said. I mean, this was a journey that God was drawing you closer to him, and the enemy was trying to draw you away from him. I did not know that at the time. And as we get into our next thing, we'll see, now we look back, you know, we always look back and can see, oh, those were, you know, those were a little breadcrumbs that God was trying to warn us, or those are some of the things that if we had, you know, slowed down, paid a lot of attention, you know, then maybe we would have seen them. I don't know, but we're all human. And I just realized that, you know, when you came along and where I was, and then I started going through the change of life, I mean, that was horrible. And so there were so many things that, you know, it's like a perfect storm. And it was as if the enemy wanted to step in right then and make sure that you believed lies about yourself. You're always beautiful. And you know, your brothers and your sister had chosen to follow Jesus. They were very faithful in their walk. And I remember after some of bad choices that you made that we're going to talk about, you know, what God has done in your life, I remember you saying to me, I never felt like I could measure up to be Christy. I remember you saying to me, well, I'm not Christy, I'm not Scott. And I would say, you know, I'm like, well, I know, honey, never wanted you, never, you to be them. I have right. them.
Yeah.
I have them. I want you to be you.
Yeah. The biggest thing, and I didn't know who that was, but I think the biggest thing, like looking back of how the enemy was setting me up for when I did go off to school, was I was so focused on what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I had no idea what was going on in my heart. And so all I looked at was like, I'm doing all the right things. I'm the good Christian girl. I go to church. I read my Bible. I pray. I love the Lord. I have the right friends. You know, like I'm not doing anything. You know, it was all about performance. Like that was, mm-hmm. that was a thing that the enemy really got me. And I don't blame that on, you know, like you could be like, oh, what church did you, or what, who are you being taught? It's like, mm-hmm. that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because that was not at all that's not the environment that, there's literally no fault in that. It just was the enemy, for whatever reason, over many, many years, that was what he was putting in me, was looking at my performance and ignoring mm-hmm. I had no clue what was going on in my heart. And then, of course, when a few years later, you know, when I get into college and then I get into situations and it's like what's in your heart comes out. And I had no mm-hmm. idea. And so I think that's like one thing where, whether it's in relationships or just even your relationship with the Lord, like to not mm-hmm. be so hyper-focused on what am I doing? I mean, I know that like faith without works is dead, but also like you need faith, you know, like
I was going to say, you know, one of the things you always would say about Christy and Scott, you would talk about their performance. You know, I can't be like them.
Well, that's all I knew. All, yeah, you know, that's all I was focusing on.
And so then you internally did that as well. And of course, obedience is a key. And I'm sure that, you know, as a teenager, we are talking about performance all the time. But I do want to go back and say, so basically in your high school years, you were trying to be the goody-goody Christian.
100%. That's who I thought I was supposed to be. It's like I'm a Bowen. We go to church. We're very high up mm-hmm. in leadership. Like that. That's who I was. Like that's how I perceived who I was.
So basically, you were using God to run from God.
100%.
Using God, I'm a Christian, I go to church, I'm in the youth, I go to all of the church camps, all those things, but yet your heart.
It led to a very entitled heart, because I felt like I'm doing all the right things. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't necessarily using God to run from God. I know that's what I was doing, but it was more, I was using God to get God. I wanted to try to get God to do what I want him to do.
Again, a performance.
Yeah. If I do everything right, then he's going to answer my prayers the way I want him to. He's going to mm-hmm. He's going to do what I want him to do. Because yeah, I've been the good Christian girl. Like, why would he not? Mm-hmm. And so I felt very entitled to that. Like you owe me, which I hate. Mm-hmm. Like every time I say that in that part of my story, it makes like my skin crawl, because I'm like, God does not owe me anything. You know, like at this point in my walk mm-hmm. and where I'm at and where God's brought me, it's like, I can't even believe that I had the audacity to have that mentality with the Lord. But I did, I felt like that. I felt like you owe me. Like look at everything I've done for you. Look at what I do, look at what I don't do, you know.
Oh, I could really be bad, and you know, I didn't go out with them. I didn't go out with those friends.
Yeah, I didn't drink anything at that party, or I didn't even go to the mm-hmm. party, or I mm-hmm. didn't, you know, like I chose the friends. And I think that's the other thing too, is I chose my friends, and not like they, you know, I don't know who I would have been friends with, but I chose them based off of that, which again, I don't think this is bad, but it goes back to like, I don't know that I think that's where I didn't really feel connected to them, because it was more of like, oh, you're good Christians, I'm just going to be friends with you. Rather than, mm-hmm. and not all my friends were like that. I had some like very dear and close friends growing up. And one of them, God used to ultimately save my life. But yeah, it was, so I think that was like part of it too, why I never really felt super connected to my friends, because it was more of like, what are you doing? So everything, I went through everything with performing, even the Lord, like how was the Lord performing in my life? Like mm-hmm. That was the root of almost everything.
What you don't know, or you do know, but I never really connected it until this moment, is that the enemy had done the same thing to me many years ago. Remember, I told you, you came from this redemptive, this where God had totally changed my life and, and redeemed our marriage and everything. But the reason that we were having the marital problems is that I, too, was waiting on God to do, what I wanted him to do. And I felt like I was in church all the time and doing all the right things. Now, I don't think that I passed that on to you, but I could have. But what I'm saying is, I think what I want to say is that Satan uses the same thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. And we so often think, well, if I just do all the right things, then God owes me this and this. We forget about the cross. We forget about what he has done.
Well, I think what it was not that you passed it down to me or not even pass it, that's not something you inherit. But I don't see it like that. I see it more of like, again, 100% hindsight, but you and I are wired so similarly. I think it more was like, we don't want pain. We don't want anything to go wrong, or we don't, and so I see it more as like, I think we were just wired so similarly that the enemy used the same tactic on both of us because he knew, just observing us. I mean, he doesn't know our hearts, but just observing us, he saw like, okay, like I have this tendency, to whatever, like kind of look at that so that we can, if we do everything right, then everything will go well. We don't have to deal with pain, or we don't have to deal with uncomfortable. We don't have to deal with, whatever. Yeah. So that's kind of, that's how I see it, is just that of, we just were so similar.
I agree.
So the enemy used the same tactic.
And I think too, again, it is easy to have the wrong view of God, which is the wrong view of God, in the fact that if I do things and do all the religious things, then God owes us, instead of looking at God as a loving God and not a Santa Claus. It's not like I give in my list and he's supposed to, fulfill them and things like that. It's hard. And I know that the world plays into that. We live in a world where performance is everything, what we look like, what we have and everything. So now the enemy is taking, not only our view of God, but the world's view, and kind of, putting an emphasis on it. It's kind of making our view of God seem normal and right. And I'm not saying that God doesn't bless obedience. I'm not saying God, obedience is key to, like you said, if you love me, you'll do what I have. If you have faith in me, you'll do that.
I live very similarly now than I did when I was in high school in a lot of ways, but my motivation is 100% different.
Yeah, there's a difference in your heart.
What I did when I was younger and doing all the quote unquote right things, I did it so that God would bless me. And now I do it because I love the Lord, and I'm just blessed because I know him, whether or not he does anything or not. I mean, I have to keep that in check. I'm not saying it's like I do that perfectly, but I think it's like me-centered versus God-centered. Like that's all, it's all about me. Mm-hmm. It's all about God doing what I want him to do, all about God being who I want him to be. And I didn't really, and this is where it makes me sad, like, because I wasn't really trying to know the Lord to know him. Like, I just trying to know the Lord so that he would do what I wanted him to do. And even like, I mean, I remember going to college and that was my mentality. It was like, I'm going to go to church. I'm going to get the right friends. I'm going to be in the right sorority. I'm going to, I had no intention of turning the way that I did, which I mean, it's a lot of, because a lot of people think that too. Like when I go into what happened in college, they think like, oh, like I went thinking like, oh, I'm going to go and like live and do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, that was never my intention. And then I, go through Rush and didn't get the sorority that I didn't get the good Christian sorority, which didn't make any sense to me because I was a good Christian girl. And, there was everything that I sought to have that was right and good in my eyes didn't happen. And then that's kind of when everything started. I was getting squeezed. You always say this, when you get put under pressure, like whatever comes out is what's in your heart. And I started to get squeezed in college. And what was in my heart was a lot of bitterness and a lot of anger and a lot of entitlement because God was not performing the way that I expected him to. And what I was unknowingly demanding him to. So I was mad.
For me as a mom, I could see the misery. You're very much like me. You said that. We're wired a lot.
We're very transparent.
were very transparent, and I could see hurt. I could see hurt in your eyes. I could, I remember, you know, as your mom crying when you would go to the dance and you'd come back and say, nobody danced with me.
I mean, I didn't go on one date in high school. I mean, for perspective, when I say like, I was not the girl that was chosen. Like I was not asked once on, I was not asked on one date in high school.
I'm just saying this mother was praying. I was seeing the hurt and I couldn't do anything about it. I didn't know at the time that Satan was setting you up. I was just a mom that wanted your daughter to be happy. And you would tell me, you know, like, mom, nobody wants me or nobody's chosen me. And I'm like, honey, you're beautiful. You're just, they're insecure. They're jealous, you know, all these things. In the meantime, I'm on my knees and I'm praying, God, just let somebody ask her out. Let her, you know, have a date. Let her, you know, these things. And as a mother, I wasn't aware that Satan was about to give you some choices, that these feelings were so strong that would cause you to go down that path. I didn't know that. I didn't know what was ahead of you, but I knew enough. I knew that you were hurting, and I knew that life wasn't the way that you wanted it to be. And, you know, just comments and things that you would say, like, I'm never chosen. I'm ugly. I feel fat. You know, I'm like, honey, you're not any of those. Those are just feelings.
And even my personality, like, I felt like I was boring. I felt like I, you know, like, no one thinks I'm fun, or I don't remember what I would say. Yeah. Some, you know, things along those lines. Like, it was, yeah, I was very miserable.
And so
internally.
Yeah. And I don't know that you even knew how miserable you were, because you probably stuffed it.
I did.
But I know I didn't. And again, you could probably see the pain in your eyes, as I could see. But we had no idea what was going on. What in a few years, that unresolved lies that you believed that were never told, that never revealed the truth. Little did we know that there was going to be some big choices in your life, that you were going to draw from all of those lies you had embraced to be true. I didn't know all the lies that was going in. I could see the pain. I could see the hurt. And I remember you saying, Mom, I've just been praying for Christian friends. I'm like, honey, I'm praying for Christian friends for you too. And unfortunately, Christian friends are people, and they would disappoint you. And it makes it harder when they're friends. And then you would hear that this group of people got together and then they didn't invite you and all these things.
Oh my gosh. So, I mean, I cannot even imagine if I had social media back then. I don't even know what would have happened.
Oh, no. But yeah. Well, we wouldn't be having to write this down. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I was being set up for sure.
Mm-hmm. And this mother is praying very hard. I could sense some things, but I didn't know exactly what the enemy was doing, and I certainly didn't know what God was doing, and I certainly didn't know what God was going to allow you to go through that pace. You know, with Adam and Eve, God said, don't do it, and then he walked away. And I'm like, why aren't you standing in front of that tree, jumping up and down, going, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it?
Mm-hmm.
But God gave them a choice because he loved them, and he wanted them to choose him over, you know, disobedience. And so we don't realize that, you know, when I think about Eve seeing that tree always, that wasn't the first time she saw that tree. But now Satan has got her, and there's a longing, because it says that she looked at it and she desired it. She desired something God had said no to. And this was way before she really took it. It was right before it. And so I think as we begin, if we see like how you've worked, how God has worked in your life, and then you go off to college with this unhealthy biblical, you know, view of
what's not biblical,
of, you know, who God is and who you are. I mean, yeah, unbiblical view of who God is, and then lies of who, and not knowing who you are, and then wanting godly friends, and then they don't accept you. But guess who does? Friends that are not Christians, that are not, they're making terrible choices. And I remember, and we're going to kind of leave it at that right now and come back to it next week, But I remember you saying to me, oh, Mom, these people, they accept me. They're so much fun. They laugh at my jokes. I mean, it was as if, it's as if Satan had listened to everything you've said and wrote it down and then sent someone that would do exactly what you would think that you wanted, never knowing that this was going to be one of the biggest mistakes of your life. And I had no idea. And neither did you.
Thanks for listening. I'm so glad that you could be a part of our conversation. To continue the conversation, you can find Dot on social media at Dot Bowen or visit her website, dotbowen.com. Subscribe, like, and share with your friends, and we will see you next week on Write This Down with Dot Bowen.